welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Mowbray, and in each episode I will discuss the key topics that impact football coaching in the foundation and youth development phases. Thanks for listening, I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello everyone, I hope everyone is good, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Soccer Coaching Podcast. This one is going to be a bit unique because it's the first time it's going to be a solo episode, so you are stuck with me for the next half an hour or 40 minutes or so. But please don't switch off or move away, it's going to be worth it, I promise you. Because even though it's me on my own, it's really going to be all about asking you a key question. So I thought it was a good opportunity just to reflect and give some thought to this particular question. And hopefully you can think about it yourself and see what your answer might be to it. So the question is obviously in the title of the podcast, which is, who are you doing it for really? And that's the question I want you to ponder today. And I'm going to talk a bit about why that question's come to the forefront. So for those that listen to other episodes of the podcast, you may have picked up a bit about my own coaching background. So just to reiterate some of that, I've coached for about 7 years now in the grassroots kind of foundation phase predominantly space, but I have coached from under 6 to under 16s. I've coached boys and girls. I've coached what we call A, B or C teams. I've coached in different leagues across North London and the home counties. And probably most interestingly, I've coached more than half that time teams that don't have my own kids in them. So that's kind of been a good experience as well. So I say that not to kind of suggest by any way that I'm some expert coach, because I know categorically that I'm not. But it does give you a whole bunch of experiences around the whole training and playing environment in different settings. So I'm hoping that will have some influence and impact on reflecting upon this question about who are we doing it for, really. So yeah, that's a bit about my background. Probably no surprises there. And during that time, I've been thinking about what I've seen. And firstly, there's been some really good stuff. There's no doubt about that. So things like participation, for example, there's no doubt that there are a lot of young people playing football, which is brilliant to see. Go out most weekday evenings and most Astro 3G pitches are booked up with clubs doing training sessions for players. Certainly at the weekend, Saturday and especially Sundays, Sunday mornings, most football pitches are taken up with children playing football in organised team sports, which again is great to see. Participation, I think, is very impressive. Other things that I've seen that are good is dedication. So there's a lot of dedication, not obviously just from the players who are playing, but also from parents to get players to places, from the coaches and the managers that help in supporting the training sessions and the match days, from clubs that are putting all the work around the administration side to make sure that players can be able to play games and have facilities to train and play at, for trustees that look after those clubs, you know, that kind of make sure that things are done in a way to enable the football to take place. So there's a big dedication there from lots of people. Passion as well. There's no doubt that you see lots of passion, whether that's the passion for the training sessions or especially the passion that comes through on match days. So people do care, they're passionate, they're emotionally attached to the whole process, which can be a good thing. Facilities, there's some great facilities now, I think, compared to maybe 30 or 40 years ago. Certainly when I was playing as a kid, it's kind of it's chalk and cheese really now what you can get now. The quality of the 3 and 4G pitches, the all the kids have a ball each, you've got hurdles, ladders, all sorts of gimmicks and gizmos that people can use now to support the training and make it fun. So I think facilities wise and equipment, it's definitely improved loads, and there's some really good stuff out there. So I want to make that clear that there is lots and lots of good things out there. However, in the 7 years or so that I've been involved in the foundation phase especially, but grassroots coaching more broadly, there's certainly a fair bit of not so good stuff. In fact, there's a fair bit of bad stuff too. So you may or may not have seen some of these things, but what comes to mind for me would be things like arguing. So there's quite a lot of arguments that I see that can be internally within clubs or within teams. But often it's on the match day experience between teams, coaches, managers, refs, and Lions people and things. I've even seen fighting break out. I think it was an under-sevens tournament. So we've seen parents actually fighting. We've seen the police being called and turned up at footballing events because of things that have been gone on or things that have been said, threats and stuff like that. I've seen cheating. So I've seen players cheat. I've seen refs cheat. I've seen managers try and influence it and cheat games. I've seen a lot of ego, bravadery and just kind of general carry on. And I've seen a fair bit of selfishness, I think, with blatantly where you've got adults making choices that are more in their interest than they are in the interest of the players. And although I don't want to be too negative about this whole thing, the reality is that that is facts. These are things that I have seen, and they're not things I've seen occasionally, they're things I've seen frequently. And that's what got me asking this question. Who are we doing it for, really? Because I don't think the children want to see arguing or fighting or cheating or the adults dominating and taking over or making selfish decisions in interest for them and not for the players. They don't want to see that. So why would it be happening? So that's kind of what we're going to ponder a little bit. I'm going to talk about maybe different types of coaches, the people that influence those environments, some of the red flags, and just really what I like to do, if it's okay for those that are listening, is just have a think yourselves during this and think, okay, where do I sit in this space? My gut feeling is if you've taken the time to find a podcast and spend a bit of time listening to someone else going on about it, you're probably more on the side of the good stuff than the bad stuff. But I hope so anyway. But, you know, we can all reflect a little bit. And during the next half an hour or so, I'll make two things clear. Some things will be the facts, things I believe are factual. And I'll try and make them clear when I say them. And other things will be my opinion. Now, obviously, facts can be wrong, and I'm happy to be judged on that. And also my opinions are just my opinions. So I'm not going to say that's how things are or should be. It's just how I see things. And again, I'm happy for someone to have a different view on that. But all this stuff comes from a genuine place of trying to say about, you know, how can we best make things as great as possible for the children that we're impacting on. And that's what we're trying to do by looking at this question in a bit more detail. So firstly then, what I will say is I do believe that training has improved significantly, generally speaking, over the last 5 to 10 years. I think some of the work the FA have done, the messaging out there, the resources that are being shared professionally and through the grassroots circuit, I think has really increased the quality in the training for most players. So it's less drill based, it's much more player centred than it would have been maybe 5 or 10 years ago. And like I say, most kids have a ball to play with now, they understand it, the coaches kind of get the environment a bit better. So I think that has improved. And even though I think in some cases there's still a long way to go, you can see a significant shift in the right direction, I believe, around training. However, from my experience and what I've seen, what hasn't improved is the match day experience. And I actually think it's got worse. I think specifically it's got worse since COVID. And I'll come on some points about that maybe a bit later on. But I think it has got worse. It's become more intense. It's become more win focused or results focused. And it's become more about the coaches or the adults in those environments than it has about the players, from my experience. And again, I'll talk a bit more about that in a bit. But some of the people responsible for the good and the bad. So obviously the players have a responsibility there, because however young they may be, they still got responsibility to act a certain way. However, I would say that it's really hard to blame players when they're 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. And often it's the adult influence around those players we have to look at, really, as well as the players themselves. But the players have a responsibility, or certainly an impact on whether there's the good experiences or the bad experience. Parents have a massive role to play in all this, so they have a big influence too on how those environments play out. Obviously, coaches and managers do, so that they impact significantly on the training and match day experience. Clubs do, so how the clubs conduct themselves, how they recruit their managers, how they manage issues, how they support good practice, deal with bad practice. Leagues, the way the league's set up, the way they police what goes on, the way they shine spotlights on the things that are important and are conducive to a positive learning environment as opposed to those that aren't. And obviously the governing bodies do as well. So over here, the FA would have influence over those leagues, either through the county FAs or as a national governing body. So those six different key aspects all influence on the whole coaching environment. And ultimately, it's that as a collective that pans out in how good or bad the experience is for training and or matches. So if we think about that, then I think it's important to understand that the two key ones for me would really be the parents and the coaches when we're talking about grassroots football in the foundation phase. So the parents' influence, that parental influence, and the coach's influence are probably fundamental. Doesn't mean that the clubs aren't important and the leagues aren't either. They've certainly got roles to play as well, and it certainly doesn't mean that the players haven't got responsibility because they have too, and we'll talk a bit about that. But I think mostly it's around the parents and the coaches, and that's kind of what I want to focus this question around today on: who you're doing it for in the eyes of a parent or a coach. So it got me thinking about that, and I think the first thing to say really is around parents. I don't want to be critical of parents because ultimately, they probably haven't done the courses, read the books, listened to the podcasts, watched the webinars. They probably haven't had an opportunity or desire necessarily to engulf themselves in kind of the whole world of coaching football. So there's an understandable understanding if their knowledge is limited around how best to support their child or the children's environment around coaching. So we have to recognise that they simply don't necessarily know what good practice looks like. In my opinion, there are many parents out there that actually believe some of the things I would consider to be poor practice is good practice. So they like to see players playing in set positions. They like to see a very organised, coach-centred training session. They like to see lots of discipline, where my personal belief is that actually a coaching environment that's a bit more chaotic, that relies on the players making more choices, that's not about the coach but about the players a bit more, that allows opportunities for players to make mistakes, is a more positive environment. Now, that is subjective, but that's how I see it. I think for parents that don't see it that way, then they're more inclined to have their child in an environment that I would say was less advantageous for their long-term development. But that, you know, that's how I see it. But the bottom line is parents won't, or probably shouldn't know as much as we do about the whole coaching journey and experience, because they don't need to. They haven't had to do that process. And it's our job really as coaches to try and bring them up to speed on certain things so they understand why we're doing the stuff that we're doing and how it can influence their children in a more positive way. The problem you've got there is if you've got coaches that don't want to embrace some of this, what I would perceive to be more positive coaching practices, then it's quite easy to paint yourself as a great coach in the eyes of these parents by doing the wrong things, because they won't know what good looks like. So it becomes a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, really, that actually I'm a good coach because I'm doing the wrong things, because you don't know what the right things are. So it got me thinking about, okay, coaching and the types of coaches that are out there and what I've experienced. So again, this bit isn't factual. This is just based on my experience and how I perceive things to be. So I reflected on it and I thought, actually, do you know what you can't take out of the equation? You can't take ego out of the equation. The same way that you can't take competitiveness out of sport. You can't have non-competitive football. It's absolute nonsense. Not possible. So the same way you can't take competition out of sport, you can't take ego out of the coaches, you know, or anybody for that matter. You know, ego is what it is by definition. It's the part of us. So let's accept that ego is in there. The same way we would accept competitiveness as part of football. So, okay, we've got ego in the equation. We have to recognise that as coaches now. I kind of thought, well, then coaches would fit into one of two categories. You've got the me-go coaches, so me-ego coaches, and you've got the we-go coaches, so the we-ego coaches. Okay, and you could be on either side there, a me-go coach or a we-go coach. And I'll break those down a little bit more detail so you can think about maybe where you might fit on this. And I'll do it for myself. So on one side of that scale, if you like, so the me-go, the we-go, you can break it down into three. So if we look at the me-go coach first. Okay, so if we had a line going across from left to right, and halfway point was the me-go and the other half was the we-go. If we break down the me-go side first into three different types of coaches, at the far end, at the one extreme end, you've got the it's all about me me-go coach. So this would be the kind of coach that deliver a session where they're very much the focal point. they will use language like, it's in my team, do this for me, I want us to do this. It will be very much about them, their opinions, their way. There'll be little opportunity for the players to have a say in any decision making, really, around formations, practice, leadership, those kind of things there. It will be very much the coach centred. So, you know, they dictate the process really from top to tail. So that's one end of the equation. And that goes beyond just the players as well. So that maybe the way they communicate to the parents, whether they communicate to the club, the opposition, is very much the them show. So if it was Scott, me, the Migo coach, it's very much the Scott show. You know, it's all about me. I'm giving out the information. I'm running this team. I'm doing it my way. And it's either my way or the highway. So that's on one end. If we move slightly up the scale now, still in the Migo section, we go to the me and my son coach. Now, this could be son or daughter. So, but just to say, I've kind of put that as me and my son coach, but me and my kid coach, if you like. So this is the coach where they are still very much them focused. So it's very much about me, but also it's about me and my kid. So actually, you know what, I'm in this process, but I'm in it for me and my kid. And they can be quite overt about that. So, you know, again, they might not do it sneakily. It might be one of the things where they just say categorically, I'm here because I'm here to do the best I can for my child. And actually anything else is kind of a bonus. And what you see here quite common is the same stuff you see in the Migo coach. So it's very much them centered, very much their ideas and their way of doing things. However, when it comes to their kid, it's a bit different. So their kid probably gets to take the free kicks, the corners, probably is the captain, probably gets to play in a position they want to play in the most, probably has more opportunities to do other stuff that the coach has manipulated around the environment that they're in. So maybe access to other clubs or training environments or age groups, things like this, just ways in which they can manipulate it. So they've always got kind of one and three quarter eyes on their own kid, and then the rest of the quarter of the eyes kind of share between the other players in that team. So they're very much focused on themselves and their child. You've got the Migo coach, it's all about me. You've got the Migo coach, me and my son, and then you kind of move a little bit further now towards that middle line, if you like, where it's me and my team. So still on the Migo side of things. And when I say me and my team, this coach is about the strong players in their team. So they've kind of got beyond just themselves and their own child. And they're focused a little bit more on the team now, but it's very much the strong players in that team. So they'll do anything for, you know, to support the strong players. But if you're not good enough, you're out, or you get limited opportunity or less game time or stuck in one position. You know, so you kind of got that coach there that's still about them. So their child is still very much the focus. But they also do recognise, actually, you know what, with strong players, I'm going to support them too and build that team up there. And they're often the ones that will go around and try and recruit other players from other teams, will move players out that aren't performing quite quickly, constantly looking at trying to just build up a strong team, not looking at long-term development, but very much focused on actually the here and now and the winning for the now. So that's the kind of three categories I put down under the Migo section as a coach. So me, all about me, me and my child, or me and my strong players in my team. So now we go, keep going off now to the Wego side of things. So moving up a little bit to the scale. Now we've gone past this halfway mark now. So that the first coach I would say out of the three on the Wego side would be, it's we, the teams. Okay, so here we're talking about a coach that actually thinks, you know what, I do get it. I'm here for my team to support the team, but it's for them. So I'm here for the team. And that could be the immediate team or the teams in that particular year group. So they recognise the impact they have on more than just themselves, their child, or the strong players in their team. But they recognise the impact they're having on all the players in that team and the teams that they influence in that year group as well. So they'll be making decisions more about, okay, what's in the best interest of all the players. So they might think about, okay, about rotating, about equal playing time, about trying to let the players have some say in the process itself. So what practices we might run, who might be the captain this week, giving player feedback to each other, letting them make some of the decisions around how games might progress, letting them lead the team talks at halftime or full time. Just giving them a bit more opportunity to have ownership of the process. So the coach there is taking themselves a bit out of the equation and is more about facilitating the process rather than just owning it and dominating it. So that's the Wego coach, the first one. That would be we and the team. Then you move a little bit further again up the scale in the We Go side to We the Club. So here again, the coach takes all the good practice from the We the Teams bit, but now actually is also focused on the club itself. So, okay, what's in the best interest for the whole club? So can I make choices here that I can support maybe the younger teams or the younger coaches to help them get even better? Could we help players by playing up with older age groups to see if that works? Can we share ideas and training practices? Can we work more collaboratively to make sure that actually the stuff I'm doing here, not just for my team or the team that I'm facilitating with, but also for other teams as well, so we can support that process to make it as best as possible for all the players within the club. And if we go right to the very end of this scale now, so we've, you know, it's in the We Go side, but the third point, if you like, and we're now the furthest right, we've gone from the furthest left to the furthest right now, we've got the We Go coach, and it's We and the Sport. So here, this is the coach that actually recognised the value of the sport itself for what it is and for the development of the children that are involved in it and wants to support that process. So they'll think about the opposition they're going to be playing against, the opposition coaches, the leagues, the FA, coaching courses. They want to embrace as much as they can to be able to support their players' development in a more well-rounded approach as possible by being as exposed to as many different environments as they can outside of the club as well as inside the club. So just to recap quickly on that one, the scale goes from left to right with a halfway point. On the left, you've got the Me Go coaches, which is all about me, or moving slightly up, you've got me and my child, or slightly up further, you've got me and my team, strong team. Then you edge into the We Go side of the scale, and the first one there is We the Teams, so that's the teams you immediately influence, We the Club, and then We the Sport. Okay, and there's the range I see. Now again, you can correct me if you think I'm wrong or even you've not seen that, but for me, that's kind of how I see coaches. Now, I probably know, 40 to 50 coaches reasonably well. Some more than others, but reasonable. We played their teams a few times, or I've been on courses with them, or whatever else, or you know, I spent time watching their training, or I've seen their teams playing things, so I know them reasonably well. Now, not to be disrespectful, but in my experience, I would say that if I was to take about 100 coaches, I would say somewhere between 90 and 95 would be relatively well positioned on the Me Go side of that equation. There would probably be a handful-ish that would be on the We Go side of that scale. Now, just to say that, in my opinion, it isn't, you're not kind of just one of those. So, for example, you might be actually, you know, my epicenter might be the me and my team, but I drift a little bit into we and the teams, and a bit into me and my son, or just me, you know. But your epicenter is kind of me and my team. Your epicenter might be actually we the teams. But actually, you might drift occasionally into the strongest players or the club. It might go a bit either way, you know. But the question is, where's your epicenter? Where do you sit mostly? And then how much does that dominate your decision making and what you do with regards to the players that you influence? So I genuinely believe, or from what I've seen from my experience, over 90% of coaches that I've come across would be firmly positioned in the Me Go side of that scale. And lots of those would be, epicenter would be somewhere between the me and my child and me and my strongest players in my team. That's where they would be. So for me, therein lies the issue. Because if you're positioned in that space straight away, it becomes really hard then to make choices that are in the best interest for the other players maybe around that team, either directly or indirectly, the club, and certainly the sport more broadly, including the opposition and other teams you're playing against helping that, it becomes almost impossible to make good choices around those because your focus is very much about you and that immediate team and those strongest players. Now, this becomes compounded when you play against other managers, which if 90 plus percent of managers are like that, that'll be the majority of teams you play against will be similar, who have a similar mindset, because then suddenly that just fuels that fire, because you know you're increasing that ego part of it all by playing against managers that do a similar thing to what you may be doing. So focusing on the strongest players in your team, focusing on results, focusing on you being the center and having the answers, rather than looking more broadly at okay, all the players, the opposition and everything else. So again, it just fuels the kind of entrenchedness of that particular mindset to how you approach coaching. I know this is going to be quite controversial because people will say to me, well, hold on a minute, Scott, you know, what happens? You can't, it's all well and good saying that. And you've got this ideology of, okay, everyone's to be like, oh, we the sport, who's really going to do that? You know, we're busy people, we're parents, we've got jobs, we do this as a volunteer basis, we're just doing our best out there. And I totally get that. I totally get that. But what I don't buy into is this thing about, okay, because you're a volunteer, anything goes. I don't buy into it. And I know a lot of people at the FA and a few people that I respect and I would class as friends at the FA, you know, they will always say, you know, actually volunteers do a great job and we're so lucky to have the grassroots coach out there and everything else. Well, my challenge back will be if you go walking around a pitch on a Sunday morning, I'm not sure that you're going to see what you think you're going to see. There's going to be a lot of bad practice and a lot of volunteers out there that are more focused on themselves and their own egos than they are on truly developing their players. They're focused on the result of a game and winning the match than they are on developing their players. They're focused more on how it looks on them and how it makes them feel rather than actually developing the players that they can influence. And I don't believe that being a volunteer is an excuse for poor performance, especially when it comes to children. I just don't think it's right. But the consequence there would be, okay then, Scott, so if all these coaches that you don't think are very good suddenly leave the game, these players won't get to play football anymore. And I get that. But there's two things I would say to that. One is, I don't believe they have to leave the game, these coaches. I think they just have to be helped to make better choices around the development of the players that they can influence. I think that, and that can come from the other powers, like the leagues and the governing bodies. But they can be helped to do it so they haven't got to leave and do that. And if they did leave, I think we would find other coaches that would replace them anyway, in most cases. I always hear about teams that are going to fold and collapse, but they very rarely do because someone else steps up. And sometimes that person that steps up is better because they're actually willing to learn and work with the players rather than just tell the players what they need to do. But second of all, I think actually, if you take the adults out of the equation, these kids, if they want to play football, they'll go and play football in a park. They'll go down and what they'll do is they'll find a way of making the game fair. They'll sort the teams out so they're fair. They'll have more fun. They'll have more opportunity to fall over, do different things, play different positions because they'll manage themselves. Because it's funny, as soon as you take the adults out of the equation, especially the ones that aren't focused on the development side but on the winning side, suddenly the kids manage to manage this process much, much better than when the adults are there. I think you would see kids in the parks having more fun, more engagement, more time than some of the experiences they get working under organised adult influence sport. I heard something the other day and it said success to adults is very different to success for kids. And you know what? I think that's so true. And the reality is the kids have it right. The kids know what success looks like. They know what makes them happy and what's engaged them. And sometimes adults don't get that. So we have to listen to the kids and trust the kids' judgment. And I went to a game at the weekend and actually a couple of games. So I went to a game on the Saturday. My youngest boy was playing a 7-a-side match. And on the pitch next to us, there was a 9-a-side game already started. It was coming to the end of it. And the pitches weren't that close together. They were a little way apart. And I went for a little walk round to see the other game just briefly. And as I got to that pitch, literally I was there for 30 seconds, a massive row broke out. So the players on the pitch were pushing and shoving. Both linesmen from either side were shouting at each other across the pitch. Three parents from one of the teams were on the pitch shouting at the manager. The manager was shouting at the ref. The ref was about 14 years old and was getting upset. Like, and I'd been on the pitch. I'd walked past the pitch like for 30 seconds, and that's what I saw. One game, one thing, that was it. So, you know, that and that's not an unfamiliar set of circumstances to see in grassroots football where I live, which is a shame, but that's the reality of it. And then on the Sunday, my older boy had a cup game, but they'd made a mistake. When I say they, this is the governing body made a mistake. And they'd put my son's team in the wrong group. So they were in an easier group than they should have been. So rather than, and this was flagged up a few weeks back, but rather than change that or do something about the fixture, both teams had to play the game. It was very one-sided. Now, you could argue that the managers might have done a bit more to try and manage that themselves to make it work. But in theory, it's a competitive cup game, for whatever that's worth, at under-12s, but that's what it was. but it was a completely pointless practice. It really was. It was so one-sided. It was ridiculous. And I don't think you can argue resilience for one of the teams, and you can argue some goalkeeper practice for one of the teams and some finisher practicing for the other team, but really that's not what this is about. And I would almost guarantee that if you took those same, what have you got there? It was 9 aside, so what, 20-odd kids. If you took those 20-odd kids and you just gave them 2 hours with a few balls and a couple of goals in a park somewhere, they would have managed to organise themselves into a game that was pretty even, pretty exciting, different positions, bit of fun. They'd have dealt with all the dramas and the issues that they might have crept into the game like these things do. They'd have got much more out of it than one team completely dominating another team for the best part of 60 minutes. So again, this is where adults get involved in this, in the equation, but actually make the process worse than if kids were left to their own to do it. And I know this all sounds very, very critical, but it is going back to that question. Who are we doing it for, really? Because if we're doing it for the kids, if we're generally doing it for the children that we're impacting on, then why is there arguing? Why is there fighting? Why are we cheating? Why are we making it all about us? Why is there the selfishness? Why aren't we bothering to learn about what actual child development looks like and education looks like for these young people? Why aren't we learning to work with other coaches to try and make the environment as positive as possible? Why are we allowing parents on the touchline shouting abuse at the children, their own children, the opposition children? Why are we encouraging refs to be biased and influential when it's a home game? Why are we not playing some of the boys or girls more times than others because they're stronger or not so strong? Why are we playing under sevens in one position all season? Why are we making our own son the captain of games or making him take all the free kicks? Why are we doing these things? Why is it happening? Why are we going out and taking players from other clubs? Why are we trying to create a little Premier League team when we're dealing with 7 or 8 year olds? Why aren't we taking the players that we've got and trying to work with them over a long time to try and make them the best players they can possibly be for their set of circumstances? Why are we not working with the clubs in and around us to try and share good practice, share ideas, organise games in the best interest of all the players? Why aren't we challenging players in more life skill ways rather than just about the football? Why are we giving all the answers to the players ourselves and not challenging them to find solutions to the questions that we pose to them in a playing environment rather than just telling them stuff? Why are we accepting the fact that other coaches do this, but yet we're just letting them get away with it and not challenging them on it? I'm not saying you have to be controversial or confrontational, but if you accept poor practice from a fellow coach, if you just make light heart of it or make a joke of it or something like that, then you're as much the problem as the person that's doing it in the first place. So maybe it's not a big deal. Maybe I'm getting carried away. Maybe it's just a complete unnecessary rant. But this comes from a place of passion and enthusiasm, because what I know categorically is a child only gets one under six season, or one under seven season, or one under eight season. And if you're the person steering that, facilitating that environment for that one season, they'll never get that time back again. Once it's gone forever. So there's a massive responsibility on us to try and do the right thing by these children. It's huge, but it's not that hard. It is hard, but it's not hard. All you've got to say to yourself, is it in the best interest for the children? Not the child, not a few children, but the children more broadly. You won't always get it right, and there'll be sometimes when you've got to make choices that actually are quite tough on one or two of the kids for the interest of all the kids. And there'll be a few times when you've got to make choices that are tough on the interest for you and your team immediately, but in the interest of the broader picture. And that's what you need to do if you're going to be involved in foundation phase grassroots coaching, because it's not about trying to make yourself feel good or trying to make your strongest players be great and even better. It's about making that commitment to helping the whole sport be better by working collaboratively with people across the teams, across the club, across the leagues, across other clubs, to try and make sure that all those kids that you impact on, because you'll impact on thousands of kids in what you do, even working with just one team, have a good experience. It's not just down to what you influence on just your immediate team. And it's not the kids' fault that they're either stuck with you or with another coach. It's not their fault. You know, you may be the best coach ever doing exactly the right things, but if you're going to come play against a coach that isn't, then how can you influence that environment? You know, how can you help it so actually these kids' experience is quite good too, even though you're not there day to day supporting them when they're training, but actually maybe on that playing day you can do something that's a good gesture to help their team as well, because it just shows the right way that things can be done, rather than actually just kind of being blinkered and just doing the things that suit you and your team. And I know it's a big ask, and I think when you look at the fact that, in my opinion, so many of the coaches are kind of some distance away from looking beyond their immediate surroundings, it's going to be really hard to change that cycle. But unfortunately, until we change that cycle, my worry is that this match day experience of players will never be as good as it could possibly be, not even close. I think currently the bar of acceptability that we have, it's where I am, for match day specifically, is far too low. It's so low. The things that we allow to happen, the things that we expect to happen, are just unacceptable. When you're talking about kids that are 7, 8, 9 and 10, these are the kids that put teeth under their pillows for the tooth fairy. These are the kids that write letters to Santa Claus. These are the kids, you know, that go to bed still with teddies. You know, these aren't adults. These are children, and they're just playing a game and having a bit of fun. But yet you've got arguing, fighting, shouting, swearing, parents hostile, poor body language, coaches berating children, not letting mistakes happen, you know, making decisions that are in their interest, not in the players' interests, you know, not giving opportunity to learn, develop and try different things and experiment, but only in the process. And it just makes me wonder, why? Who are you doing it for? If you're doing it for the kids, then surely you have to recognise the fact that actually, you know what, letting other kids have an opportunity to take some free kicks, take corners, choose who the captain's going to be, decide on the team practice, so, give them an opportunity to spend longer in your team to get to feel, to get comfortable with what's going on, rather than moving them out after 6 months because you don't think they're quite good enough. Constantly looking to try and bring players in from outside because you want to build the dream team. Who are you doing it for? Because that's not going to help your players. Even your strong players, they need to be part of a team, part of a family that feels like they're working together on something. You know, players don't want to have other players coming and going every 2 minutes. One thing I do here is, oh, but Scott, you've got to understand, I mean, my boy really cares about the result. He gets so upset when we lose. I'm going to say to you, don't believe you. I don't believe it's the case. The only players that I see get upset when they lose is when there's an adult nearby who's upset when that team's lost. And that's usually either the parent or the coach. They're the only ones that get bothered by it. And you know what? Even then, it's superficial. They're only acting bothered because they feel like it's the right thing to do, because the parent in the or the grown-up in the room is acting bothered. So they feel like, oh, I've got to act bothered as well. Otherwise, what's going on? But I'm telling you now, any coach worth their salt can end the result of a game 30 seconds after the game's finished. Whether that's been a great result or a bad result, it doesn't matter. You focus on the process and other bits, the result can be gone straight away. I've always said to my players, I think it's really important you care about the result. You should care about the result during the game. That shouldn't influence how we play and what we do. That's my job to make sure we try and do things the right way still. So the rotation, the playing time, trying to play the right kind of football and everything else. But you should care about the result. But the minute that game is over, the result's done, we focus on the process, what went well, where we can improve, there's always things we could do better, how we're going to go about that, and that's the priority now. Whether we won 10-0 or lost 10-0 after the whistle's gone, it's neither here nor there. It's what did we do well to win 10-0, or what could we have done even better? Where did it go wrong for the 10-0 defeat, and what could we do better for next time? What have we learned from this process? What are we going to work on the next 6, 12 months to help us get even better individually and collectively? So, yeah, I don't think, you know, oh, my kid wants to win and they get upset if he doesn't. I think that, from my experience, that shows more about the adults around that child than the child themselves. That definitely was a bit of a rant, but what I would like you to do, if it's okay, is just think about yourselves and what you, you know, and where you are. Maybe my spectrum is a bit out there, but if you think about kind of one end is the me, all about me coach, and it goes up to the we go, think about the sport more broadly. Where do you sit in the middle there? Where's your core position? You know, have you got one eye on the other players that you influence, maybe directly in the team or just around the team, or other age groups or other clubs that you go and play against? You know, even if that coach hasn't got one eye on their players more collectively, but if you have, can you help in some ways? Can you influence that to make a positive playing environment? Because the more of us that can do that, then the more kids are going to stick at the sport longer. They're going to stay there to under 12s, under 13s, where we still got that cliff edge where they fall away. They're going to enjoy the process more. There's less pressure on us as coaches because we're not worried about all the ego nonsense, because we're playing against people that are similar mindset to us, in the sense that, you know, they're putting all the kids first on both sets, on both teams, on both sets of clubs. And the more we can move the scale effect towards that position, then surely the better it's going to be for the players. And even though it sounds like it's a hard thing to do, it really shouldn't be, should it? Because as the adults in the room, if we can't make choices that are in the best decision for the children we're impacting on, well, you have to question, should we be in that room? Should we be in that position to be able to do that? Our job as grassroots foundation faced coaches, volunteers or not, is to try and support the best coaching and playing environment we can possibly for all the children we impact on, because we are the adults in the room. We wouldn't accept it in a school if there was teachers that just focused on a few kids or made it about themselves and ignored our kid, or only focused on our kid, not the rest of the class. We wouldn't accept it in other environments. I think we have to really say to ourselves, look, if I'm going to do this job, I need to remind myself, however hard it may be at times, I need to remind myself that I'm in it for all the kids. And I have to do my best to stand up for all those kids. And when other people don't, you know what? I'm going to make my position clear. I might not be listened to, but I'm going to make it clear in the most positive, constructive way I can. But I'm not going to accept the fact that actually, as a grown adult, you aren't doing the best by the children you're impacting on, because that says a lot about you and maybe isn't the kind of person that you want to spend that much time with. There's another saying that I'll finish on, and it's that fact that there's no greater sin than knowing what the right thing to do is but not doing it. And for me, that's tenfold when it comes to children. So when it comes to children, if you know as the adult in the room what the right thing to do is, but you're choosing not to do it or hiding it because you can get away with it, that is the biggest sin out there as far as I can see when it comes to working with and supporting child development. So thank you for listening. I apologise for it being a bit of a rant. I didn't mean to come across that way. I hope what it's done is maybe just stimulate some thoughts. What I hope more than anything else is maybe this is just an experience I've had being across Northwest London and those home counties. Maybe it's different in Liverpool, Birmingham, Manchester or whatever, overseas in different countries that you may be. Maybe it's different there. I'd love to hear from you. If it's a lot more positive, then please share. I'd love to hear that. I'd love to hear some good stuff that's going on out there with coaches and some of the, and I'm sure that there is. But if my tale is familiar to you in the sense of actually, you know what, that match day experience is very much about winning and coaches shouting and joystick coaching and long ball football when teams are struggling and fixed positions and strongest players getting most game time and some boys getting no game time at all and, you know, very much coach centred and arguing and parents shouting. If that's your experience too, then surely we've got to do something about that. You know, I don't see much coming from the FA around it. I don't see much coming from the leagues. I don't even see clubs and trustees doing this that I see. They don't seem to want to be involved. I think, you know, we have to own it ourselves and say, you know what, in this space that I'm involved in, I'm going to do my best I possibly can to influence it in the most positive way possible for my immediate players, those players that I impact on outside of that circle, and then sport more broadly. And if more of us can do that, then hopefully we can move the whole match day experience in the right direction as much as we have moved maybe the training environment as well. But please let me know if it's the same as what you've got where you are or different. You can reach out to us through the email, which I'll put in the show notes, or on Twitter. I hope that I haven't been too controversial. I'm not trying to criticize coaches, and those with best intentions, keep working at it, because one thing I will say is I've made all the mistakes. So I'm not preaching to people because I'm the perfect coach, because I am definitely not. I'm not preaching to anybody, and it's not about judging or pointing fingers. It's about self-reflection. At some point saying to yourself, do you know what? Right now, I need to ask myself the question, who am I doing it for? And I can take the flack from the parents if we don't win games, and I can take the criticism or get of my own ego if the other coach thinks they're the best coach on the planet now because they just beat us. I know that I did the right thing by my players, the players in the team, the club, and the players we played against, and the sport more broadly, because I made these good choices. It may not have helped us win the game today, but actually, you know what? I've sold the message to the players, they understand it. I've sold the message to the parents, so they understand it. If they want to go to a coach that's obsessed with winning and all about the coach, well, there's plenty out there, they can go somewhere else. But here, we are going to put the kids first. And by putting the kids first, we are going to make choices that are in their best interests rather than mine as the manager or the coach, or you as the parent. We're going to do what's right for the kids. And if that includes some parental education on the way, or club education, or trust education on the way, then so be it. But when I see people that don't stand up for the kids and won't do it, then I'm going to not support that process and I'm going to walk away from that and leave it alone. And there's different ways of doing that. But certainly if you support that, if you sit alongside it and say nothing, well, you can be as guilty as a person that's doing it. You've got to either walk away from it or make a point around that bad practice too. And the more of us that do that, then hopefully the more we shift these sands to a more positive place. So all these young players can love their football even more than they currently do and for a lot longer than they currently do. Thanks for listening. Appreciate your time. Do shout out and let us know what you think about some of the views on here. I hope they haven't been too controversial, and keep safe and well.